This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. Great show for you today. I am thrilled to have in our studio Dr. Bud Pierce. You might know him from his gubernatorial run a couple of years back. We were rooting for him.
Yes, we were.
And I liked what he had to say. But he's a working doctor. He's an oncologist here in Salem.
Busy guy.
Works a lot of hours fighting those evil cancer cells. And everybody hates cancer because cancer is truly horrible.
Cancer sucks.
Anyway, working doctor here in town. He's staying busy, staying in the public eye with a podcast, with newsletters, interviewing people, and of course, practicing medicine. So many things to talk about, including the current governor, including what the legislature is currently doing, and how medicine interacts with government or vice versa. And so, welcome to the studios, Dr. Pierce.
Thanks. Great to be here and a great radio station.
I had a good fortune of talking to Dr. Pierce for like 15 minutes before the show started. I don't know where to begin. We could talk for an hour on any number of a dozen different topics.
Oh, yeah.
But let's talk about, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about the campaign and you running.
Sounds good.
So you jumped in, you thought something needs to be done, something needs to be done differently, right?
I was watching Governor Kitzhaber resign, and the Republican Party was clearly in disarray. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't clear to me anyone was going to step up and actually want to run. And I said, I'm going to run.
That is so awesome. I know you had a lot of fans in the community that know you. And, you know, Dr. Pierce ran as a citizen. He worked. He was practicing. He was a practicing doctor while he was running a campaign and made a pretty darn good go of it, I got to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's what I liked. I don't know. I'm so fortunate to be able to have you here because I don't run into Dr. Pierce every day. So
that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. You don't want to have to see me.
Don't come into his office. Because this is what I, when I'm screaming at the newspaper and I'm screaming at the television and the radio, it's because how bad do the Democratic Party leadership have to be for how long before they were considered Republican? So what I liked what you had to say is, hey, would you look at our graduation rates? Would you look at our outcomes? Would you look at our household incomes since 1990 or since the last time we had somebody other than a Democrat at the governor's mansion? Look at all of these markers, and they've not gone in the right direction. In case of education, we're a national laughingstock. And hey, let's look at Dr. Bud Pierce, right? Mm-hmm. Let's look at anybody. I don't care if you're a Democrat, a Libertarian, Constitutional. I don't care, Green Party. But you have to look at the markers, and you were saying this, you got to look at these markers that we judge our state and our governance by, and they've gone the wrong direction for 25 plus years. Why don't we look at something else?
And it keeps going in that direction, unfortunately. Excuse me. So an easy thing in Salem is look at the homelessness. You go to Portland, you look at the homelessness. And what's happened is it's become the cost of housing has become so expensive that our poorest citizens live on the streets. And many of our citizens are, you know, living barely paycheck to paycheck to pay their rents. And I was out on the coast, and a lot of the kind of vacation-y properties and stuff, the younger people can't move into those or use those because, again, they're using all their money for their current housing. So the question is, why is our housing so expensive? It's cheaper in other places. What rules and regulations, the cost of land, the cost of paying cities and counties to build, the design build requirements, those are too high. They need to be lowered. Again, not looking at that as a fundamental issue. We look at our transportation. We all agree we don't like gridlock. We need to replace bridges. We need to improve the infrastructure. Again, no interest in other than maintaining what we have with no expansion, even though we have so many more citizens. Our education, short school day, short school year, it makes me incredibly angry when I hear educators say, well, we're not sure if a longer school day or a longer school year or better trained and prepared teachers is going to change the outcome. And I go, really? You want a great athlete? They practice all the time. You want a great musician? They practice all the time. You want a great student? You have to give them great instructors. And again, there seems to be a unawareness amongst the leadership that these are critical issues. And so far, The public likes it well enough the way it is. They just do. We have to accept that. In this state, they're going to default to the Democratic side. Texas, Idaho, they're going to default to the Republican side. And so, again, it takes a 2008 or some bad situation where they'll look at the opposition party. I don't know how it came to that. It's not my way of thinking. But that's the reality of where we are. And so, again, when I ran, I really just tried to point out things that I thought we were, you know, doing badly and we're still doing badly, and to propose some solutions on how we can do better. And when I ran, the public said, "You're a nice guy, bud. That's great. We'll keep what we have." And that's okay. That's okay. The time will come. The time will come where people will tire of increasing homelessness. They'll tire of increasing gridlock. They'll tire of mediocrity in the schools. They'll tire of the lack of reform of government, which consumes more and more of our resources for less and less output. And when that time comes, people have to be out there and be ready to step up.
I love the way you put that, that the government in its totality is taking more and more of our resources, meaning the output of our labors as a society, and getting less and less satisfactory output.
Correct. We most of us, whether you're poor, middle class, or wealthy, unless you're extremely wealthy, you're working into May, June for government services. So you're working 4 or 5 months, up to 6 months, with your fees and taxes that go to government. And that leaves you with very little to take care of your parents, to put away for your retirement, to educate your children, and to live on a day-to-day basis. So again, people talk about how our wages haven't risen. Well, I will say our costs have risen way out of proportion. Costs of government, costs of housing, costs of higher education and training. The problem isn't so much that we don't have higher wages from our work. The problem is the costs have gone up just astronomically. I remember talking to a neighbor who talked about Social Security in the 50s. I think it was 1% or 2% mm-hmm. of Social Security. Now we're 13, 14, 15%. And the new proposal is to let it go higher. There's to be really free, you have to be able to live the way you want to live, and you have to have the means to live that way. And you need to have money. You need your own money.
You were talking, because you just triggered to be really free, and that's a recurring topic in your podcast.
Correct.
Right? So tell us a little bit about how people can find your podcast and what kind of topics you cover.
So it's at Oregon Crossroads, and we're covering kind of current issues just like you talk about here on your show. And so we focus on things like housing and affordable housing. We branch out. We talk to Jim Bruneau of the wine industry. I spoke to people who develop real estate projects. I talked to the head of DHS about that agency and how he's a brilliant guy who wants to reform that agency and the challenge of reforming a government agency. And the reason it's so challenging is when you have an organization in the private sector, if it doesn't reform, it dies. If it's a government agency and it doesn't reform and produce well, there will be some shakeup at the top, but generally nothing happens and they need more resources. So again, right. how do you create the environment where it's not in a competitive business environment, but you have the desire and the interest in reform for the purpose of doing a great job? It's actually harder to do that because it's easier to do that if you don't reform, you're not going to make it. So again, that's going to take really tip-top agency leadership, incredibly motivated workforce for the agencies, and frankly, a governor who will drive it in that direction, because that's what the governor should do. The governor should be in there with their agency heads, DHS, Department of Transportation, Oregon Health Authority, saying, how do we make these agencies function at the highest level with the least resources so we can accomplish the tasks the citizens need? We need government. We need good government. And yet, at the same time, allow them to keep the vast majority of their own resources for their own freedom and their own life. And that's how it should be. Very challenging to do. Very challenging.
So I've got an idea. Can we just change your registration to Democrat and then we can get you elected? You have great ideas.
Again, the issue of the current Democratic Party is that it really likes that central authority. And those most of us on the Republican side would say, yes, we need a central authority, but it needs to be a light hand of authority with most of the decision making out with the public. And I'm going to be testifying tomorrow in the House about the expansion of the death with dignity laws, which I'm not interested in expanding it. I think where we are is fine. But the first thing I would do is I would put the legislators down and the citizens above as a statement. I mean, who is in charge? And it's clear that when you interact with government and the leadership of government, they really feel that sense of monarchy or authority. Yeah. And that's one, again, this whole, the whole process, and it's so interesting to have run into, have seen that and touch upon that is, I just don't believe in any of that.
Very frustrating. We're talking to Dr. Bud Pierce, former gubernatorial candidate and local oncologist, and we got to take a break. But so many more topics to hit with Dr. Bud. Stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers, where we are at every Monday through Friday, where you are to listen to individuals, ideas, institutions, and initiatives of a local nature and sometimes statewide. We have with us today Dr. Bud Pierce. This is be very exciting for me to have Dr. Pierce here. He's fascinating, by the way. In addition to occasionally he can be charming as well.
Very occasionally.
Yeah, but fascinating. Because it's touched our family so much, oncology is a fascinating subject to me. And hopefully we'll have time in this hour to talk about how the government interacts with medicine and how technology is changing medicine and how pharma is changing medicine. Let's stick, however, you're talking about leadership and agency reform, having leadership at the top, which we've been critical of here on Newsmakers.
Just
about
a little.
When do you stand up and say, this has to happen now, and like in the case of the foster children debacle happening in the state, and that they get out of touch. I mean, like the agencies, you were saying, the government, it doesn't reform itself. It just kind of persists until the point where now we have a one-party state, in effect, and they're not listening. They're not listening to the populace.
At all.
And you said something interesting before we were on the air about they are not us.
Very interesting, as I ran as a citizen and I interacted with the political class, and it's clear that and in speaking to people that get elected and hold office commonly for many terms, when they first get elected and they're out, then they leave us and they join the political class, they are part of us and they know our problems and such. But they go into their own culture and they usually separate themselves by not working anymore, which if you think about it, is really a citizen legislature where you work and you go there for a few months, go back to work and see if what you did affected your society directly by how it affected your work and your life. Mm. But they are completely separate and they're just, they don't know us. They're not thinking about us. They don't know our problems. And all the zany things they do within the legislature and the kind of unusual political, the partisan and the tricksterism they do all seems normal to them. I mean, it really is. So right now, the Republicans are at a huge disadvantage. So they want to block the enacting of the tax increase by not showing up, and that this has been done in the past. Whereas the reality is none of us would do that in our life or at work. I mean, if things don't work out, you just go there, you grit your teeth, you do the best you can, and you go on, and you just look at this, but all this becomes very normal to them. And this whole behavior is normal. And it's just so strange to someone who has like a real life that, no, you don't do that. You show up to work, you do the best you can. This state has voted, whether they know it or not, for more regulations, higher taxation on work and investment, which is the income tax. And we're going to get the results of that. And people just have to be told that this is what they voted for, whether they knew it or not. This is what they're going to get. The Republicans are not going to be able to stop it. We don't have the votes. They have a supermajority. And our job as Republicans is to say, this isn't the right way to do this. We need to lower the cost of government rather than taxing more to just pay the cost of what we've created. We need to reform PERS, which, by the way, if we didn't hire a single employee over the next 30 years, it would cost us about $230 billion estimated to pay what we've promised. We have about $50 billion in our PERS investment fund right now. That right now we're paying about $10 billion in salary to public employees in the state and putting $5 billion into retirement for employees of the state. Some of that's money going to people who are working now for their future retirement, but a lot of it to people already retired, mm-hmm. and that this train is going to go off the track. And when you talk about tax increases from the counties and the cities and the state, it's about PERS.
There's so much overreach, in our opinion, with the legislature this term, because they just, it's like giddy, like they're in a candy store with the ability to vote anything they can.
They need the money. And they need the money because of PERS. And that's going to answer most of your revenue questions of why they need the money.
Do you think that they could overreach this term and there be a backlash so people are willing to elect more Republicans and change the balance of power there?
Again, when people in their daily lives of getting up and getting ready for work and getting their children ready for school and taking care of grandma and grandpa and going to work and driving to work and coming home, when that the quality of life deteriorates to where people say, this isn't working for me, when they can't, when the money is even tighter than it is now, then people will look at other options. Until then, no.
What's really scary is the thought of Republicans kind of giving up on Oregon, like staying in the woodwork, you know, or staying in the background and not even bother initiating because they're beaten down.
It's interesting. In addition to Crossroads, we're talking about putting together a structure of younger people who are conservative, usually Republican, with some of the ideas of, again, an efficient, practical government that doesn't overreach, and, again, citizens having more control over their lives and more money, and putting together an actual structure of that to help elect candidates locally, and then to have kind of a structure in place so that when the state wants to change, and you're really talking about Multnomah, Washington County, and the state as a whole, Lane County, then we'll have structure and people that can step up. So a lot of us that have... When we lose, some people give up and other people work harder. So I would just say there's enough Republicans who are thinking about this in different ways that we'll have a future.
Yeah, like voting with your ballot.
Voting with your ballot. And, you know, that's the thing. It seems like, and I'm not a political operative, but what really wins election, one would be voter turnout of your people. Mm-hmm. You know, your people have to show up and vote. I mean, we've seen some elections lost here locally because people thought they didn't have to, or they got complacent or something. And two, the independents. When you're talking about a statewide race or a national race, it's the independents because there's so many Democrats, there's so many Republicans. A lot of those will be loyal, right?
Right.
And then the independents are going to say, well, what's appealing? When those are the people are going to have to feel the pain you're talking about, Dr. Pearson, I think, and vote and block in huge numbers for the Republican candidate.
Correct. It's a timing thing for us. Again, this is Oregon. Again, if I was a Democrat in Texas or Idaho, I'd be speaking the same language. I would say we can't win now. The public has chosen the kind of party and candidates they want for the regular times. We need to be ready for the times that are different.
All right. So Republicans, stay engaged.
Stay engaged.
Stay engaged. Pay attention. Look for our opportunities.
Correct.
Do you think some of them haven't voted just because it's like my vote doesn't matter?
I think some of that. If you look at the turnout, the last election was about 80% D's and R's. So the problem is there's a lot more D's and R's. So that wasn't going to win it for us. I think it's interesting running as a Republican, because the Republicans have lost so much. When you're in the primary, tremendous enthusiasm, want our candidate to win. People are all excited. And then once you're the candidate, it's almost like a lot of people have given up. And the enthusiasm isn't really there for the general as a primary on the Republican side, because, again, that sense is you can't win. So it kind of puts a damper on the general election sense, even though that's the goal. But that's an interesting observation.
We're talking to Dr. Bud Pierce, a local oncologist, former gubernatorial candidate. How you were talking about leadership and getting more for our dollar out of the government, right? More for our dollar so we don't have to produce quite so much just to produce a government outcome. Is it possible to shrink the government? Is it possible to get more for less?
So there's modern management techniques. And I was looking when I was running for governor, and I was talking about how we had to balance a budget without Measure 97, the gross receipts tax, which was higher than the gross receipts tax that we're going to get. And I looked at Indiana, where the governor of Indiana is famous for being frugal. And we looked at their population and what they did. And we had about 40,000 FTE equivalents in our state government. And we looked at that, and that could be taken down to about 30,000 and really should have no change in performance. Talk about 10,000 FTE equivalents per year, PERS, medical benefits, and all that. That's a lot. So, interesting if you think about it, when government needs more money, they just say they want more taxes. Mm-hmm. When you're selling a good or a service, whether it be an iPhone or whatever you like, you look at how much you think people can afford to pay. And you figure out how to produce that product for that amount of money and that disciplining. And if you charge too much, again, you're going out of business. So it's interesting how we really have to have people with a keen interest in frugality on the government side, or they just keep consuming more resources because they don't have the market discipline. It's not they're undisciplined, but they don't have the reality of failure if they can't do it for a reasonable cost. And again, that's going to take tremendous leadership. And that's a struggle in Washington and every state, but that really is a struggle. Will we allow citizens to be in there who can make those hard decisions, say, no, we have to do it a different way. We can't do it the same way that's expensive. It's not that we don't need to do a job. We need to do the job differently so we can do the job for lower costs. And that's modern management technique. That's something that and again, if you look at countries like Singapore, which very interestingly brings in their business people into government back and forth, and when they bring them in, they actually pay them so they'll do it. That's what they do, and they actually do probably better than us because they get the good minds and their best business leaders. Not that government needs to run like a business, but it has to run with more business efficiency so that the job government needs to do, which is important, can be afforded by the public. That's the challenge.
Okay, now the business side of that is, I feel that the government doesn't think that way at all, and they treat our money as, well, it's their money. They don't treat it as, you know, they're working to earn it. They're thinking, okay, all the citizens give us this money, it's our money, we're going to spend it the way we want. And they don't do it frugally at all.
Or good stewardship.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. That is a problem. And again, there are societies that have figured this out better. And again, I did have a travel to Singapore, and I was very interested in that city-state. They have a lot of challenges. And but again, their ability to bring business people into the government for running the machinery of government. I don't talk about making political policy.
Right.
That's a different issue. But talking about the machinery of government and letting them come in and modernize it, and then they'll step back and go into the center. That's probably the kind of model we have to follow because we have the wrong people there. I don't think you can find a government employee who says, I want to waste money and so the citizens have less money. But again, without the right leadership and modernization of the practices, the modern practices of government in terms of personnel and process, you blow all the money.
Right.
And you can't just say, well, we tried. Well, you know, children try. Adults have to do. And so, again, we need to have real reform in that mentality. Business efficiency, not business people running government, but business efficiency within the bureaucracy, critical. And that would be bringing in good business talent from the leading business schools and modern techniques and processes. I mean, that's the only way to do it.
One of the mindsets, too, is they have a budget, and if they don't use all the budget, they lose it. That is a bad mindset that they have.
Mm-hmm. And again, no, if you're working for a real business, they never look at it that way.
Right.
That revenue would either go back, you know, shareholders, be reinvested in the business or something like that. Again, it's we have so much knowledge about how to operate bureaucracies and businesses efficiently so you can produce a great product or service at a reasonable price. And we've decided not to do that in government. To our disadvantage. And that's all government. I've done federal, state, county. It's like why?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
All right. We're talking to Dr. Bud Pierce and could talk all day. And he's throwing it down.
Yes, I'm
writing this. That's an awesome line. It should be somewhere. Children try. Adults have to do. Hey, Oregonians, elect some adults and have them get some stuff done. When we come back from break, we're going to talk about how Dr. Pierce said, you know, when the government gets involved, things get expensive, and how that relates to medicine. So stick with us. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we have one of my favorite guests ever on Newsmakers here with us, Dr. Bud Pierce, an oncologist and a former gubernatorial candidate. And you can catch his website or his podcasts, and he's got a newsletter. I think he has a lot of things to say that we should be paying attention to and continuing to. So we'll make sure before the end of the hour that you know how to find him. Right now, we kind of segued from leadership in government and how you can get more for less, and how when the government exists and persists, and then it gets involved in industry, sometime with, you know, good intention.
Yeah, unintended consequences.
But things get expensive, and rarely do we see that more strikingly than in medicine.
Absolutely. You know, we're at about 18% of GDP. That's phenomenal. Again, my little, many other countries are more like 10%, 8%, 7%. And I won't talk about wellness. That's a little bit of a different topic that we can talk about one time. But In terms of medicine, again, we're in love with keeping records and keeping track and reporting. Mm-hmm. And under the Bush administration, they really moved Medicare in the direction of computerized medical records. And that sounds like a great idea. So we all bought very expensive computer systems and began this requirement of documentation. And unfortunately, when you bring in a computer system, you're not just required to do what you did on paper. You're required to do 10, 100 times more. So right now, the average practicing internist, for every hour they see patients, they're spending 3 hours with their documentation and computer. 3 hours for what?
Wow.
And you'll see a lot of times when you go to like the ED or an office, you'll see a scribe who's actually a paid person who's working with this very expensive electronic system, who's with a doctor, who's entering the orders and keeping track of the notes and such. Again, it takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. There was a recent study of looking at medical trainees, residents, and interns. And yes, you work for 24 hours. It doesn't kill you because there's times in your life where you're the only one and you're going to have to work for 24 hours. So you need to know that while you're training so you can do it. And now that they followed them, and for 24 hours in this one study, they spent 16 hours in front of their computer, 16 out of 24. They slept for 3 hours, and they spent 5 hours on education and patient taking care of patients. So again, the government, unintended consequence. The other interesting thing is the systems don't talk to one another. So if you're within a system, it communicates readily. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times there's 3, 4, 5 different electronic systems, and you can't log in with your patient and get the information on a patient in another system. You actually have to get them to fax it to you, and it has to be scanned into your system, which is ridiculous in this era. So again, when you get the government involved, in a lot of times, and that's a real criticism, what no matter who's in charge, is the government bureaucracy is, they like to tell you how to do your work with the idea of helping the outcome. But again, you shouldn't micromanage the people doing the work. And so what you should say is you need to keep your records in an orderly fashion that's efficient and leave it at that, and that can be reproduced and people can communicate. Not you will buy this system, you'll do this, you'll enter this information, you'll take this vital sign, you'll do this and that, because they do that. They literally do that. And what ends up happening is a lot of times the whole industry is geared toward documentation and keeping record keeping, and that's what they view as their primary mission, not patient care.
Mm.
It's an amazing thing that's happened in medicine.
It's like DMV.
Do you find more intrusions coming from a legislative branch of our government or the regulatory?
It's the regulatory, because the legislature passes laws, but then they're turned into rules. And mm-hmm. for instance, we have a small pharmacy in our office to give out the expensive oncology drugs because it's a convenience. Sometimes the insurance plan will contract with the big ones, and some other ones say, no, just do it, let your local people do it. Because it's actually, whenever it's our patient, we make sure they either get the drug or we get them copay assistance, all this kind of stuff. Well, the state board of pharmacy weighed in and first said, well, since you don't have an official pharmacist, we have pharmacy techs and stuff, we want the doctors to make sure they initial all the drugs as they're handed out. We said, okay. Well, that's not good enough. Now we have to hand it to them, the doctor.
Jeez.
So yesterday I was seeing a patient, and someone has to pick up a medicine, not my patient, because the practitioner's out of the office. I have to get up, say, excuse me, leave, take the pill, look at it, hand it to the person, say, here's your medicine. These are rules.
Wow.
These are, and again, the ideal law would be the patient will get the right medicine safely and know how to use it. That's a correct law. Not the doctor will sign the bottle and sign the form, and the doctor will hand it to them. That's what you're talking about. And that's through all industries.
Wow.
That is not just medicine. And it's death by a thousand cuts.
And the people that don't understand, when we say regulations need to be cut, people that criticize, say, Donald Trump, he wants to deregulate X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. That's what we're talking about. I mean, what's next? You have to personally click print on the label? You know,
well, again, it could certainly come to that. And again, it was interesting. I love actually listening to Bloomberg Radio, and they're clearly a business channel, but they're certainly a left to center business channel. And they were talking about regulations and stuff. And the point was brought up by Arthur Levin, the former head of the SEC. He said, regulations and laws are written for a crisis. They need to be constantly looked at and rewritten. And that's the reality. And that's why they shall be sunsetted, because the problem that you addressed is certainly not a problem anymore. And that law or rule that you wrote is not certainly applicable to that exact situation. Now, you may still need a law and rule, but not for that. And we get layers upon layers of rules and regulations written for one crisis after the other. And at the end, they're conflicting and don't make sense. And how do we as citizens deal with that?
It would be nice to have some politician that'll run with a platform of I'm going to spend my entire political career getting things off the books.
That has been done. That clearly has, people have tried that. But again, not to minimize the important role of government in our society. But again, think about it. You had the financial crisis. You made a lot of rules on the banking and investment sector. That's gone. That's flat gone. It's a different time. So yeah, you need rules, and you need ideally rules that are going to foresee the next crisis, because it's not going to be writing ridiculous loans on homes that people can't afford. That's not going to happen again. But that's what the laws are in place for, and they have an unintended consequence on other activities of the investment banking and home sector. So you really need to sunset them all. You flat need to sunset them and say it's gone. Look at it again, modernize it, or dump it.
Interesting.
For every law they pass, they should take three off the books.
Yeah, we have. So, for instance, for us to get paid by Medicare, if we look at the Medicare rule book for us as physicians, it's more detailed and has more rules than the IRS tax code. How can you? So basically, there's no way we can be following all the laws. You can't know it, which actually makes the application of the law and the requirements to follow the law completely arbitrary. And that's a scary thing, because it really comes down to the person who's in charge of overseeing the law. When you have so many rules that no one can possibly know or follow, then do they apply these laws to you or not?
Right.
And that is a problem. That is a huge problem.
And how many of those in that stack of books are there to protect the patient versus there to protect the taxpayer?
Well, they were initially written. Most laws initially are written for a legitimate concern or problem. But again, the law's written, then the regulators have to change that into practical rules, and then times change and they're no longer applicable. So that's what you're up against.
Right.
So it's the attitude that tends to happen on the left side, is the government's the solution, and that we need to turn this over to the government, because the government's here to help, right? They're here to help their patient outcome or what have you. But now they're taking the face-to-face interaction between a physician and their patients away from them with the electronic medical record. Is that getting any better? Are things getting more standardized? I mean, now we're 10 plus years into the EMR, electronic medical record kind of initiative. Is that getting any better, or is it just piling on more?
It's just piling on. It's clear we need artificial intelligence, because what happens is everything is supposed to go through a person and you keep cramming more and more information. So what we need is AI. That'll probably be the solution. You'll have HAL on your desk and it'll be going along and it'll be feeding you what you need to know and excluding the rest. When you look at people that are experts in whatever field they're in, when you first start in medicine, everything's coming at you. You can't see everything. It just paralyzes you. When you're an expert, you see what the issue is. And then if somebody asks you, did you think about this? You realize consciously you didn't. But actually, when you look at it, it wasn't applicable. So your mind saw through that and just took care of it. So you really need that AI. And that'll be a great time. When that happens, medicine will be a lot better, a lot more accurate and all that. But right now, we're just struggling with these systems that are completely inadequate. And they make it more difficult. And that's leading to the burnout in medicine, is when people just don't like to work anymore. And we face that because, again, the incessant hours and time and the difficulty of the task, and really people go into medicine to help people and to do that. Getting back to quickly on the medicine side, where people, especially on the left, say we need single payer. Two-thirds of government is paid for by, medical care is paid for by government, single payer, Medicare, Medicaid, VA, Indian Health. That's two-thirds. Two-thirds of government services are nonprofit. Most of the hospitals are nonprofit. Insurance plans are nonprofit. So we're sitting at two-thirds government single payer, in essence, two-thirds non-for-profit, and it's completely unaffordable. So with the argument being, we'll take the last third and make it government, and the last third of profit, make it non, and it'll be okay. And most of us in the field know that it's the part outside of the government that's actually supporting the government programs. So it's an interesting thing. When you're in it, you see it in a completely different way, and in a knowledgeable way. And when people talk about it on the outside, they don't know what they're talking about.
I saw, I don't know how accurate this is, but just recently a statistic, and basically 9 out of 10 Americans do have health care, either through the government, Medicare, Medicaid, private purchase, or through the employer. It's only 9 out of 10. So we're trying to find this solution that is 350 million people and this behemoth of a government to cover 9% of the people.
Yeah, it's 95% of Oregonians, because we expanded under the Affordable Care Act the Medicaid population. We got approaching 100% of kids, 95% of Oregonians have health insurance. The challenge is it's unaffordable for too many people.
Yeah.
And so that's really our challenge, is how to make it affordable. So we have coverage. We just don't have affordable coverage for too many of our citizens.
All right, folks. And listen, you get to watch this from now on. Every time it's quoted how many people don't have health care, they always use a number and they never use a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Because people go, oh, well, 8% of America doesn't have health care, but 92 do. That
Correct.
Looks like a different problem. They
Correct.
Will always cite the number of individuals
Correct.
That don't have health care in America.
Correct.
There's it. We're talking to Dr. Bud Pierce. We got one more segment, so stick with us. You listen to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers, and we have Dr. Bud Pierce with us today. If you are just joining us, you missed. Let me recap some of the
it's
topics.
It's been a pleasure so far.
We're talking about people who have been in government a long time, elected government, right?
Yeah.
That they've lost touch. They tend to lose touch over time because they get embroiled into what they're doing and how they do it and don't necessarily get forced to reform it because they're at government, both elected and administrative, I think. The quote, I wrote it down.
Oh, boy.
They are not us. They may have become. They may have gone into what they're doing, being one of us, but eventually they're no longer one of us and they don't really understand it, not connected. And, of course, when you're talking about leadership, I love this, and maybe you'll regret saying it, or maybe it'll forever stick with you, but children try, adults have to do. When we're talking about a leadership and not just trying and forming another commission, Governor Brown, maybe not, but just standing up and getting things done. I love that. And we're talking about medicine and government's role in increasing costs. And before we run out of time, I'm going to do it right now. If somebody wants to follow your thoughts and what you follow, certainly, there's a newsletter and there's a podcast. How do they connect with Dr. Bud Pierce?
So, OregonCrossroads.com, and where you have podcasts, we update it with writing and information, and that's kind of our outlet right now.
Okay. Oregon. And is there, can we subscribe to something that comes into our email box?
I think it's free. You just say want it, it comes in. There's no charge on any of this. We're not making money.
So, the same place for both things.
Correct.
All right.
How do you have time?
Again, what I would say is this. Well, this is the thing. So I'm 63 this year. I'm looking at life. I have a lot of energy still. I still have gas in the tank. But you're in your early 60s. You see the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, in my mind, it's pedal to the metal. I still have my energy. I've always had tremendous energy. So I want to do everything right now. So I'm involved with this. I'm United Way head. I go to Washington, D.C. next week for a group that's trying to help private practice stay alive. I'm in a 10-week fundraiser for the Leukemia Society Man Woman of the Year competition. I think I'll raise about $150,000 with a lot of friends. So I pretty much want to, at this point in life, people say, do you want to do this? I'm going to say yes, because the time is not infinite. And I can see that as I look at people as they age, your ability to do things is taken away. So pretty much if you ask me now, if I can, I'll say yes.
All right. In a few years, are we going to hear about you running for governor again?
The 2022 election will be an open seat. It'll depend on, where I am in my life, obviously, but also is Oregon ready for change? What I learned more than anything is, if things are going pretty well in society, people say, I like what I have. I like the Democrats being in charge. I like a Democratic governor. I'm going to vote for this. That's futile. That's mm-hmm. flat futile. If it's a time where people say, I'm not liking the way things are. I don't like the homelessness, the education system. The finances are hard for me personally. My daily life is being impacted by poor government decisions for a long time, then whether it's me or Newt or Dudley comes back or somebody in the wings coming out and says, look, you've had this group in charge for 30 years. Do you want to try something different? That can resonate in a difficult time. If it's a good time, people say, no, I actually don't want to change. I like what I have. So I think all of us need to be ready as loyal opposition. I mean that truly, loyal opposition, who are going to present a platform of reform and frugality in government and more freedom and opportunity for people. And that's what you're going to run on. But if people feel like their times are good, they're not going to listen to you. Mm. That's how it is.
Interesting. Even if they There are things that they just really don't understand about how Oregon has fallen back and fallen behind over the last 25 plus years in average household income.
Correct.
Versus the nation. Correct. And versus the state of Washington.
Correct.
It's like, do you really have to be struggling for every last dollar before you'll try something different?
They do. Yes. I'm convinced of that. So I am convinced of that, that enough have to be struggling. It's their daily life, and they're voting on that.
Yeah.
All right. We just have a few minutes left. I want to talk a little bit about the cost of health care, and it intersects again with the the bureaucracy and the administration and how the government is trying to help. Yeah, share with us the example you're talking off the air about the CCOs, coordinated care organizations, how they got formed, but then actually end up streamlining any costs.
Sure. So originally we had when we still have the Oregon Health Authority, our state organization that is involved with Medicaid payment. Medicaid is money that goes to the poor, and that program was greatly expanded under the Affordable Care Act by getting more federal money into that system. So we really ramped that up from about 400,000 to 500,000 to about 1 million people. The CCO idea was the following. Okay, up to now the doctors, the hospitals, the mental health, and dentists have been billing the government directly for how they take care of poorer people. And what we want, that's not working. We can't do that anymore. There's not enough money. So what we're going to do is we're going to push budgets out to the region, into each area, form CCOs, community care organizations. They're going to have authority and budgetary authority, and they're going to decide where the money is to go. And we believe that by pushing it out into the trenches of life, they'll make better decisions and get some of that frugality that we're talking about. They won't be as wasteful, because when you're far away centrally, it just looks like another business item. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the community, you know what needs to be paid, and it's going to be paid differently in Multnomah and in Lane and in Marion Polk. Well, what happened was we formed these CCOs. They have a budget, but we didn't cut back one iota on the Oregon Health Authority. So we still have 4,500 central employees telling the people in the periphery what to do. People in the periphery have created bureaucracy to take care of the people. They really can't function in an efficient way, so you've doubled the bureaucracy without getting any more health care delivery.
Well, that's the way to save money. There's a government solution for you on how to lower the cost of health care is form a second bureaucracy.
When they reform, they don't tend to get rid of what they've reformed away from. That is a huge weakness.
Wow.
They don't tend to do that.
That's staggering.
Mm-hmm.
That is staggering.
That's not like taking away the bills that they, you know, stack on and stack
Correct.
On.
It doesn't matter. This is my frustration. It doesn't matter how bad the leadership is in Oregon. They still vote by a party. John Kitzhaber, the worst CEO in history, in the midst of a scandal. But he's a D after his name, and they vote for him.
Correct.
And, oh, boy.
Correct.
Okay. So it's getting harder and harder for a person to own their practice, right, in terms of all the bureaucracy, what
first
you have to
time,
take care
the,
of.
First time more doctors are employed than own their practices, and that trend continues going forward. People say, well, why does it matter? I will tell you that when you own your own business, small business, whether you're a doctor, a donut maker, a dry cleaner, you work a lot more hours, you work harder, and there's more of a service mentality. I think the thing that people really resent in the healthcare delivery system now is no one's in charge, no one's looking out for me, and who's my doctor, and how do I get help? And that directly reflects, if it's your business and your practice and you don't do the job, you're going to lose your practice. You'll do a better job. It's a disadvantage to doctors and to patients.
And now doctors are working, they're being employees.
Correct. So and they work less hours, less productivity, more of them to do the same amount of work.
Mm.
And it's not like we have an overabundance of doctors in the society.
Correct.
We've been listening to Dr. Bud Pierce, former gubernatorial candidate, of course, and a local oncologist extraordinaire. Appreciate you being here. I know you're obviously very busy and very energetic, but
thank you.
We'd love to
for
have
coming
you
in.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Everybody, we'll see you next time.
This has been Lynn Fenton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.